Spread Great Ideas is meant to increase the signal in a world awash in noise. I'm your curator and host, Brian David Crane, and it is my quest to share the learnings of the world's most interesting people, the disruptors, the outliers, the libertines, and those who've been unconventionally successful so that we can become a little bit wiser together. Please welcome Martin Krung. He's a Swiss crypto native for over the past 12 years. He's a full stack developer with a background in art, software, and innovation engineering. And most importantly, this is the key part, he is a key Curve finance contributor when it comes to business development for the decentralized exchange. So Martin and I have been talking via Telegram. I am excited to be chatting with him here on the podcast. Thanks for making time. For those who don't know what Curve is and why you say on LinkedIn that it is the best decentralized exchange or DEX, what is your what's your quick elevator pitch for Curve?
Yeah, Curve has like the best technology for like non-managed liquidity, basically, because it's able to, you don't have to manage liquidity, you just submit it to your AMM and then it has liquidity itself, and it's not like others do who have like managed positions now, so you never have to manage your position, basically. And the main, we have like different products, but the best technology we have is like for stable assets, basically. So if you pair like stable coins or like ETH, liquid staking ETH, then it's the best technology out there, basically. That's only one part of our like products. It's like the first one we made, basically.
Yeah, well, I know we're going to get into Llama Lend and CRV USD, the stablecoin, later on in the podcast. Let me ask you something before we get to that. So why is it that if you're a liquidity provider, you default to Uniswap as opposed to Curve? Like, why is it that, not that you default, that's the wrong way to phrase it, but basically, is there a financial incentive for people who manage money on chain? If you are like a Van Eck or a crypto hedge fund in some form or fashion, do they get to charge a management fee, or is there some benefit to why they would park their excess liquidity or cash in a place like Uniswap as opposed to Curve?
No, I lost a little bit. You think? Yeah, I that's not how I viewed at this, you know, because I'm more like a retail, I'm more coming from retail, basically. So I think the benefit is that you don't have to manage your liquidity, basically. That's the main benefit. And it's hard to manage liquidity, right? You know, if you see the adoption from V3, Uniswap V3, it's not that high because people still open Uniswap V2 pools because you have to manage your positions all the time, basically. And that's it's for pros. So that's not the answer to your question. But if you look more on the solution side, I think it's the same at the end. It's the same because what we see now, you know, there are a lot of applications built on managing liquidity positions, basically, and they all take a cut. So even if there's more or less successful, some of them are more, some less. They add complexity to the product, basically, but they also extract value, so you have to pay them in form, basically. So this is like, it's a complexity in top, and it's a competition out there who has like the most the best like liquidity management system for Uniswap V3, basically, and it's like endless competition, basically. And you don't have to do it with Curve. So it's much more simple to use, and also it's also, if you look at mainnet, if you have to rebalance your position on Uniswap V3, you produce every time you need you pay for the rebalancing, and that's not the case with Curve, basically.
So how did you get involved with Curve? Like, what is your, I kind of skipped right over this because we started talking about liquidity providing on these different DEXs. But what is your trajectory in terms of how you got in into this business development role for Curve?
Very early, like Ethereum user, so I had like like a multi-cycle, so I had like cash on chain, and I had like to deploy it basically. It couldn't be idle, so I just tried out every product who was upcoming in the DeFi world basically very early on. So it's like I've been an early liquidity provider to Curve. So I got like the airdrop, and then since then I was always like some kind of Curve guy basically. Because yeah, it's like it has a good technology. I also got like Uniswap airdrop, but it's not the same, you know. Uniswap, the token itself, it's like, yeah, okay, it's like nothing.
What can you do with it?
Yeah. And Curve is like very different. The token is like a very deep part of our product suite basically. And it's also like, yeah, it's a token who is, it has many properties basically, but it's like, yeah, it makes sense. And it's mostly used to like adjust the system, and you get fees, you know, too. So it's like a government store, but we are not like a government. We are not a DAO who does government we are like a parameter DAO basically. We vote on params, you know. And I think that's fine, you know, mostly it's writing on parameters on the protocol. It's not about coordination, who is like making what kind of contributions or like payment of contributors. So we are Param DAO basically. And I think this is like a good thing to be basically. And it works. So.
Yeah. There's a ring fence in a way around the DAO. It's limited in scope in terms of its decisions.
Yeah. And so I was like liquidity provider. I was like playing around with all these protocols. And so I got like a Curve. I was like a Curve guy because I got the airdrop basically. It makes loyal, you know, if you like the product and use it early on, then you identify with the product basically. And it also locking up part works too, you know. I've locked them up as V Curve because at this time you couldn't do like different there was like no derivatives of Curve. So it makes loyal too, because then you have the token locked up for 4 years, and then your long term incentive to help or to look what's going on is high basically.
Yeah.
But then I have a history of DAO. So I got like, I was like a hobbyist like for 10 years. And then during the pandemic, coincidentally, I left my former company, and then I worked like for different DAOs, and then ended up with Curve DAO right now.
But you're also involved with Aladdin DAO, is that right?
No, I've been one of the first contributors to Aladdin DAO. I'm not anymore with them. It's just that.
Okay.
Aladdin DAO had like in the past they had a very different like idea to make a product, and I tried to help at this time, and then it didn't work out, the idea we had, or this time the idea didn't work, but like the founders, they just made a pivot basically. And at this point I was like you have a certain energy to start new things. And at this point, it was like, the energy was not there anymore. So I left and I was looking for different things. But I'm still very curious what they do, and they're connected somehow.
Hmm. Okay. And do you, in your role for BD for Curve, are you going to conferences? And the reason I ask is because I know a fair number of people who work at centralized exchanges have big budgets, go out for nice meals, throw parties under the auspices of business development, right? And I don't necessarily, I don't know you, but I don't see you doing that, let's say, on behalf of Curve.
No, Curve has like a history of not showing up anywhere, basically, I guess. And it's okay. So, I think it's also about, we have like product market fit. And I just have been to the Ethereum Zurich conference like last 2 days. And I didn't attend a lot of conferences in my life, basically. And somehow what you see, some have to show up because it's like they have to sell a product, basically. They don't have users, so they have to go there and say, that's me, that's my project, that's what you're doing. But Curve is like, in a way, it's different. We found product market fit, and we try to, in a way, for me, business development curve means we talk to other protocols and try to help them to integrate us or how they can use us based, basically. Also like to be a project to have token or stable coins, we help them and advise them how they should best use curve, basically. So it's much more business to business in a way. It's not that we sell curve to retail, because most of the traffic is anyway over aggregator, basically.
Yeah. So let's go on that, because I'm curious if the volume or the traffic is coming from aggregators, and when we say aggregators, we mean somebody like Matcha, CowSwap. What are One Inch? I assume they hook into like an API in the back end of Curve, or how does an aggregator get tied in with Curve, or how does Curve get tied in with one of these aggregators?
Yeah, I'm not too informed about the deep technical details, but basically, we have like registry where things show up. And of course, they can auto-discover. It's differently done. It depends also on the technology they use. You know, some of them are like integrating them in they just see them pop up and integrate them. There, the issue is in a way, it's more if we iterate on the model, and we do, you know, from outside, it looks like every pool is like, it's like a stable swap, but we have different versions of stable swap out there. And then it changed also internally how you can calculate the best rate or what aggregators try to do. They try to find out how the trade will be executed if it's executed, you know, what's the price basically. So they need pretty good model and how to calculate the price. And if you change a little bit, then this also changes. So they need to write adapters or we help them to write adapters that they can like see what's going on basically. That's the
I had seen I think on Curve's Twitter several times of requesting some of these aggregators to change which contracts or which pools they were referencing, because when Curve would iterate and release something new, the aggregators would still be hitting either interfacing with old contracts or hitting old pools, and actually Curve was losing volume relative to other DEXs because these guys were using kind of old tech, let's say. Is that right?
I think that's like, you know, under the hood, Curve is like a complex beast and things changing. And so I guess it's for every project who is like evolving the case that sometimes aggregator have like old information, use old information, or maybe even not are like incentivized to integrate you. I don't know, you know, on some layer twos, Curve is there, but we don't have like a lot of TVL. So it's like, that's like not my expertise basically, but we work on this and maybe last 3 weeks we check things and see which pool are included in which kind of aggregators. And this is one part. The other part is that you also need like arbitrageurs to, and this is more like now the soft liquidation part of lending markets, because this is done over arbitrage basically. And this is like another market where we do work like in the background basically. And that's not very visible.
Yeah, can you explain that? And what I mean, why does Curve need the arbitrage bots to enable or to substantiate the soft liquidation mechanism that's in Llama with two L's? Like, how does that work, and why is it important? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now it's got maybe I have to explain a few things about, you know. The soft liquidation mechanism, in a way, you can look at this, it's used in Curve USD. So you, if you have a collateral and you mint Curve USD, you can set your own like risk factor, basically. You can give your collateral, and then you can choose which is like the top end you get into soft liquidated and what's the lower bound you get into soft liquidation. So you have a range, basically. And what you then do, it's like, your liquidity is then like, it's like in bands. It's like, it's similar to Uniswap V3. There are like some bands where then all liquidity is like in like place basically. And it works like a stop loss order. So this means if the price, that you have a price feed, and if the price feed is going down, then this, like, these bands like triggered or like open up for a trade basically. Mm-hmm. So people can then, so arbitrage is what they do, because you have to collect like ETH in it, and you draw like curve USD. Now the ETH price is going down. So what soft liquidation does, it says one position who is on the water, basically, this position is sold to curve USD. So your collateral is slowly sold to the curve USD you lent out, basically. But it's still owned by the, you don't get it. It's still like your position is slowly changing. It's selling your ETH to curve USD internally, basically. And yeah, this basically, it starts backing it by itself. So,
let me say one thing on that real quick. So I'm a user. I have wrapped Bitcoin WBTC. I come to Curve. There's a mint cap on there of, let's say, 200 million. I don't have it in front of me at the moment, but that's the maximum amount of, I want to say this correctly, that's the maximum amount of CRV USD that can be minted against that collateral, if I understand.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So I pledge my wrapped BTC as collateral. I take out a loan against it in CRV USD. Now that wrapped BTC sits as collateral in these bands that you're describing. And so when BTC or wrap BTC drops in price, Curve in the background goes and sells that band into a liquidity pool that's also on Curve. What is that liquidity pool? Is it CRV USD WBTC, or what is the pool that pulls it into?
It's not like directly connected there where the arbitrageurs come in, because it's not that it flows directly to the other pool. The thing is, it's a system where we say, you know, it's always with like blockchain. Yeah, somebody has to make the trade basically. So we say now, okay, it's underwater, so the position is like sold and there's a discount on it. So somebody is like the arbitrage can then buy the position, basically buys the WBTC and sells it on the open market. And sends Curve USD and then gets the WBTC and then sells it on the open market, basically like this. So it's not, you can use it. It's not that you have to use like the other, our pools. You know, you could just sell the WBTC to any place who takes it, basically. But you need to pay in Curve USD. So it makes sense. Yeah, so it makes sense to use the AMM if there you get the best price. But it's possible that all venues on chain, you get the better price for your WBTC, and then you switch to another stablecoin, then buy Curve USD, and yeah.
You have to buy the collateral in Curve USD. It creates it creates a demand side for CRV USD as well, right?
Yeah. Interesting. So it's like a pool who is like, it's also a pool who has the liquidity in it, and then it's like arbitraged away. So then if the price is going down, then you are in a soft liquidation position. But then it deliquidates. So if the other way around price going up, then the thing in the other directions happens, basically. So you buy back WBTC with Curve USD, or not you. Your position is upped back, basically. And you lose part of, you know, this is like, yeah, you have to pay for it in the form that, the arbitrage has to pay the gas and it needs to be incentivized to do it. So you lose a little bit of your... if you're collateral, basically. So it's not.
Yeah.
And then at the end, you know, if you really go, all the bands are sold, then there's like a hard liquidation, then your collateral is really gone. But we didn't see many hard liquidations because we are like in an up market. So it works quite well. You see positions going into soft liquidation, then recover from it. And then, then however it is, you know, you can draw then more, or you can, change what you want to do. This point, so it's like it works quite well. There are a lot of soft liquidation, hard liquidation. Most are soft liquidations and price recovers.
And I think what's interesting to me that you said is that the protocol curve at the end of the day, like it has its loan of CRV USD repaid. So like whether it's an arbitrage bot or some other mechanism, it is repaid. Like every time you're going through these different bands, Curve as a protocol is getting CRV USD. It's like, it's not getting paid in USDT, USDC, anything else. It's getting paid in CRV USD so that at the end of the day, it's, you know, its loan book is healthy and that it was like, you can't take out an over, it has to be an over collateralized loan. You can, you know, like the protocol, the risk, I think, to Curve in making these loans, if you want to talk about peg keepers as well, we can get into that, but like is the, that the value of CRV USD drops below $1 or, you know, that it breaks peg, because that's the second part. Like it can get paid back in CRV USD. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Now you talk about how we stabilize
the peg.
Yeah. The peg for Curve USD basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just to close that we now use the same mechanism is now used also in the lending markets. The soft liquidation mechanism is also used in the lending markets. It's just the same mechanism we use on CurveUSD is also used in the lending markets, the Curve lending market basically. And I think it's a very good product basically. It's like, nobody wants to get liquidated basically. So it's like, you have more time to react. That's one side. You can look at this. You have more time to react, but you also can like set your, you can go quite close to the price who is there now and just say on the assumption, you say, if you will want drop below $2,000, you set your band this deep and then you don't have to worry except, okay. Yeah. If like the market turns completely, then maybe you have a problem then, but in a way, in the cyclic market, crypto normally behaves. So it's quite a good product for sure. And upcoming, the price going up and going down, yeah, we will see. It's just we just started in the bear market basically, and now we will see if it's performed, if the price come down, in the cycle down later. But that's not the issue. It's not the issue of performance. It just means performance, mean how people use it or how good it is like for the average user basically.
Got it. Yeah.
It stabilizes itself. So this is also maybe if you want to talk about CurveUSD, this like, yeah, it stabilizes itself because it's like the demand or its price. So the fee on the minting CurveUSD, the fee we take is depending on the price of CurveUSD basically. So if there's like an overpack, then we're going to raise so there's like too much supply basically. Mm-hmm. Then to make it like, I always switch it in the wrong direction. So
yeah,
if there's overpack, it's like CurveUSD is like, there's
it's above
too much demand, you know, because people want to have more CurveUSD. And then the fee is adjusted and the fee is adjusted on CurveUSD 2 is adjusted downwards. Yeah. No, I'm not sure. Sorry. it's strange. It's very simple, basically, but I can just never have it in my mind. It's like this.
Well, I think the beauty of it. Well, I think the beauty of it from the outside looking in is namely that the mousetrap is such that the interest rates that are charged on the loan are dictated by, you know, demand for that particular, I think it's demand for that asset. Like if you're pledging WBTC or if you pledge staked ETH, STETH, you have different interest rates on a collateral by collateral basis from what I saw. No, that's incorrect.
Yeah, but this is very, I don't know how they are checked. No, it shouldn't be. They should have the same more or less basically. Because it's just what we do now, if fees are going up, people are incentivized to buy back CurveUSD basically. So yeah, now I got it. If it's an underpack, then we do this. You know, if the price is going down, and Curfew ST is getting too cheap, basically, then the rate is going up on Curfew ST, on collateral, basically. Because then you're incentivized to buy back Curfew ST. Curfew ST is like cheap. It's under $1. So you buy it back and pay back your loan. This is the mechanism. And all the way around, if there's an upback, then we generate, and that's where that's the pack keeper comes into play. Then we generate like Curfew ST, inject it into the pack keepers. In a way, we like minting like Curfew ST, like I always say like it's like unbacked, but it's not unbacked. It's not really unbacked if you look at the size of the collateral Curfew ST has, all the BABTC and all the things that if you add it up. It's not unbacked, but it's in the sense unbacked that we open up a buffer and fill it with Curfew ST, and this Curfew ST is just generated from the protocol basically, and it fills into the pools. And then because we add Curfew ST on one side, and Curfew ST has like is overpacked to like USDT as an example, you inject more Curfew ST, so you get come back into balance, and the price goes down of Curfew ST. Goes down of Curfew ST
relative to the USDT.
Yeah. And the adjustment, it's the beauty of this system is in a way that on shrinking supply, the yield on your collateral is going up. It's like, so if the supply shrinks, you have an underpack, then the yield of the supply is going up. So we make more money, strangely, if the supply is sinking. We earn more fee on the supply shrinking, because then we have raised the rate to people getting by like the supply and pay back the debt, basically. And this is like the twist, this is like Michael's idea, basically. It's like very different than normal economic system works. In normal economic system, if you have like inflation, what do you then do? You raise the rate.
Mm-hmm. To try to make the money more expensive, let's say.
Yeah, to try to make money more expensive. And this is like, it's like switched, basically. So it's very interesting to see. You know, of course, we try to grow. So rate is going up. If we grow fast, rate is going down. If the supply of Curfew ST is growing fast, rate is going down, basically, a little bit. Maybe you don't see it, you know, because like the market cycle itself plays into this too, you know. Now it's just, everyone wants to go long. So there's a lot of demand, basically. But in theory, so if there's a lot of demand, then, the rate is going down. Sounds strange, but that's okay. So we will see if we are able to grow a lot. We will see how then, if you go in a scenario where the market shrinks again, we will see how much fee we then print. But the interesting side of this is like anti-cyclical in a way. So it's possible that we make a lot of fees if we go in a bear market, basically, because then there's just these less in demand. We have to make keep the fees we take high on the collateral to pressure out basically the
peg.
Incentivize people to buy Curfew ST from the market and pay back
keep their loan healthy.
So it's like this is like, I think that's it's a very smart system basically, because it's like long term, you know. It's not just everything Curfew does like long term. We don't glue into the Curfew. It's also glued into economics, you know. Because look at tokenomics, there's this halvening of Curfew.
Just like the Bitcoin halvening.
It's like once a year, the supply is like going down. And it's also like quite long term, basically.
I think it's a 300-year mint cycle or something. It's a pretty far out.
Now we talk really about the technology or like how but you had like other topics.
There's one thing I did want to say on what you were saying earlier. So I watched Michael on, I think it was the Unstable Summit. He was being interviewed. For those listening, we're talking about Michael Igorof, who's the founder of Curve Finance. And he was, the interviewer was asking him about Curve USD and these rates. And he said, what happens in the traditional finance sector is you have the borrow rate that the Federal Reserve dictates down to the member banks. And he said, in this lending market, instead, what happens is you have actually like the lending rate that these banks demand of Curve. So it's like it actually goes in like up. It goes up, for lack of a better way. It's not that Curve Finance is the Fed. It's more that like the market is setting the rate at which it will borrow from Curve, the CRV USD, with respect to these different collateral types, basically, or like assets. And whereas if it's the Federal Reserve, they say to the member banks, you need to raise, or how do they dictate? They set the federal funds rate like from a top-down perspective. So he had flipped it. And it was, and it so again, it like introduces market forces to allow that interest rate to actually be set at a natural, or let's say an equilibrium. Yeah. And exactly. Okay. Anyways, we can nerd out, shift to something that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it's very interesting to, this is one of his intentions, basically. It's not seen by many people. You
know? Yeah.
In a way, because many think it's just about minting CurveUSD and then speculate on CurveUSD or whatever you do with it or go along. But behind there's like a bigger, experience.
Yeah, when you and I spoke before the podcast, like I have always kind of marveled at Curve's penchant for game theory in terms of figuring out how to get people's incentives into alignment. I mean, VE CRV is an example of that. Convex is an example of that. A lot of it is game theory, deep game theory, in terms of trying to figure out how do you convince and not coerce, like legitimately convince somebody to take the outcome or take the action you would like them to take because it's in their own best interest. But it's a lot of different competitive parties and you're trying to bring them into a marketplace and have it be relatively harmonious. And when I say the marketplace, I mean, you know, the market for Curve as a token, CRV. And then out of that comes things like governance, things like cash flow, things like gauge weights and voting. And yeah. So anyways, let's shift briefly on this and go, you want to talk about VE Curve as a governance model and some of the changes that have taken place following the launch of Curve as you've seen it in the ecosystem in general?
It's changed. We didn't change anything, basically.
I mean these iterations, the solidly forks or the like Aerodrome or Velodrome or PancakeSwap is now adopted a VE cake.
You mean tokenomic model that it's many times copied, basically.
Yes. Yeah. Because Curve was, in my opinion, the pioneer of this. And now, like a lot of things in DeFi, it gets copied very quickly and iterated on.
Curve is clearly the pioneer. But the funny thing is, that's like my personal opinion. I don't know. I didn't never ask Michael. I think it's not even, I'm not sure if it's really done on purpose. Maybe it's just coincident because in a way, one issue it solves, the token, the naked token, if you trade the naked token Curve, there's no revenue share in Curve token, but only on VCurve. And it solves like an issue that, so only untransferable VCurve is like a security in a way, because there's a dividend on top. But VCurve itself, it hasn't governance right. There's no, you don't earn fee on it. So it's a very elegant solution to this problem, basically. So I guess that's one of the drivers in behind, not about, and other things, of course, then if you think it is stretched, how can I make a token who doesn't have this property? And then you come to this solution then you see, okay, there are many other properties who is like beneficial of this, because people who are like more aligned with your value or with your vision, they are ready to lock it up for 4 years. Else they just won't. So, and you give them like governance, right? And you give them like revenues, basically, and others don't get revenue. But it solves like an issue who is like really, yeah, it's an issue. You make a token, then it has all these characteristics, then you're legal, blah, blah. If you do it like this, I don't know the legal standpoint to be curved, but at the end, it's like it changed the token in a way. Yeah, and of course, yeah, resulting is the long-term incentive who's like, yeah, you like that too. So it's like beneficial on several layers, basically.
Yeah, it's game theory twice in two different instances. One with VE curve versus CRV, and also with CRV versus other stablecoins, because a lot of the attack vectors for stablecoins is this is a bank, they have taken deposits, whether it's Tether, Circle, and now they have issued this almost like a deposit receipt on chain. And Curve says, well, what's, to me, I'm paraphrasing, but Curve says, okay, cool. Like what's the important part of the stablecoin, which is you actually want to know that it is useful as a unit of measure or a transfer of value, and not that they took other assets, WBTC, staked ETH, other things that there's no bank that's like going to say, okay, cool. It's like a way to get you get to the stable coin without necessarily needing to compete head on with like a Tether or a Circle and need to swim in those regulatory waters, let's say. I don't know how to put it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. For me, this is like a side effect, basically. For me, it's much more that, you know, if you look at money or what money is, or, you know, so if you make a stable coin, any stable coin, how do you get it adopted, basically? And there's like, maybe, I guess there's like, strangely, there's like another stage in crypto, which I call like is a mean of speculation. So in crypto, you can have a stable coin and just to purely speculate on it. It's like cash with like speculative properties. And every new stablecoin, or most of them, if it's not fully backed, goes to this stage of, yeah, people just buy it to farm other tokens, or your token, project token. I guess MK, Prisma. And it's like perfect example, because there you generate the MK USDC call, and then you farm their Prisma token and you sell it on the market. But the question is, at some point, what's going to happen is you lose the speculative part of it. So every that's, I think that's different in crypto than in the traditional market. Cash is not a speculative asset, but in crypto clearly is. So this is like the first stage. Everyone makes a new stablecoin, and then it's like the stage of a speculative asset. Everyone uses it to farm and make money with it. And that's completely fine, because that's how you get like people interested in your project. But then you go to the second stage of money or quality of money. Then you say it's like a mean of exchange. So you have like the dollar is like the best mean of exchange. This is why it's so adopted, basically. So, and this is like, if you are like a DEX like us, then we are an exchange. So if we own our own dollar, we can make it the best mean of exchange in our exchange, basically. And then it gets a property who's like, yeah, it's not only the value, it has a premium on top, basically. It's usability, basically.
Yep.
And the next stage, you want to be a store of value. That's like the end goal, you know. That's what like some currency are store value, like the best store value. I live in Switzerland. Swiss francs one of the best store value you can have. It's better than as like the US dollar, basically. So this is the property you want to have. But the strange thing is, you think about property store value, you can't force it. I'll say, okay, the US maybe can force the dominance to the world, but you can't force it on money. It's about the quality of the money, or the quality of the stablecoin. in our thing, Mitch Tory once said, for me, the quality is in the pack. You know, if it's very stable, the stablest, in this vision, the stablest collateralized dollar is like very close to pack. This measures the quality of this dollar, basically. So It's a quality sign. It's the best store of value. Maybe it's the one who can really keep the peg very close. Maybe if some people maybe think in this direction. For me, it's much more, okay, you make a trade and you use CurveUSD and you buy some assets. Where is the point where you say, now I just hold CurveUSD without going to another stable coin who's fully backed or so. And you achieve this by giving CurveUSD the property that it can be used, and you can use it and buy other tokens or other stablecoins if you need it. So you get some kind of reserve asset. And I guess Curve is in a unique position because we are an AMM, we have now CurveUSD, and if you see, we clearly tried to open many pools for CurveUSD basically, because that's our blood. So, and we make money on this too. You know, if CurveUSD is adopted, we make more fees. We make more fees on CurveUSD than on trading fees. And this is also the reason why the next goal you want to achieve is you want to slow down your stablecoin. You don't want that everyone can just throw it on the market in a way. And this is soft liquidation is the perfect place to do it. Because in a soft liquidation mode, you're kind of, it's stuck basically. So it's not so, and then, or even if you're not stuck, it's just slowed down. The velocity of the curve USD is slowed down. And I think this is it's important because blockchains are very quick systems. Wow, it's very fast basically. And sometimes you see shocks. And if you see shocks, then it's always about how fast can I get the money out and creating a bank run situation. People are in panic and want to go out. And many times the system stabilizes itself after some time. But if the time is very short, then you have a bank run and then you're done basically. So if you achieve to slow down your system by giving additional properties to basically our case CurveUSD, that it can flow out that fast, you're stabilizing the system. And the chance is relatively high that if there is an incident, it can be externally, you don't know, it can be externally, whatever happens, you never know. For Curve, it's in a case, things can happen. You also on the government side, maybe if you give governments fight and you have problem, you're not able to act anymore. And then you have crisis. And if people are able to make the system fast, your chance of collapsing, getting damaged is higher. So it's good if you are able to slow the velocity down of your curve or your basic fast curve USD. It's not that we want to lock in people and not giving back their money, but one of the ideas is that, you slow it down because then it's stuck basically in different places and then it doesn't flow out so fast. So it stabilizes itself. That's one of the ideas that if there's a shock, then things happen. But I experienced it many times, on the Circle DPEC on the weekend, I was panicking too. Afterwards, you always have to think, why have I been so stupid? I didn't lose money. I didn't lose money, basically, but maybe a little bit. But I also traded on this weekend. I was affected by this, even if I know that if you think about Circle, it can, it's a serious business, I guess, nobody knows. But it's a high quality business. So the idea that it really just poof goes away, it's irrational basically. But this weekend, everyone panicked, me, I panicked too. And and then on the Monday, it was over and then it repacked. But it shows exactly what's happened sometime is that people go just in panic mode and it's some kind of collective
psychosis.
It's
madness of the crowds.
And if you get hit by this, and some protocols have been hit in the past by this, or we will see few in the future protocol who get hit by this. Even if you have like, a, would say a protocol or like a product who works well, yeah, you have problems. you have reputation damage and all that space.
Yeah.
So it's like,
I also think that with the soft liquidations, which is the fact that the protocol, in this case Curve, doesn't have to go out and market sell it the assets to be able like at and like market dump them, let's say, in order to be able to cover the required collateral to make the loan whole, is also helps slow down in a different way this sort of like cascading liquidations, right?
Yeah,
it stops a bear. It stops a bank run in a mathematical, or at least in a like a logical or a levered way, you know.
It's so important. Yeah, I agree. But there's like, that's true. It's just soften it, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's important because if wrapped Bitcoin was gold and all the central banks went out and said we need to sell our gold all at once and they were all selling at the same price, like that market can dry up or go to zero. You know, like there's no buyers or the buyer pool is so limited that they just can't handle the demand of the sell side. But anyways. Mm-hmm. We're super in the weeds. Let me shift and just go. Okay, cool. So like one of the things on Curve that's being discussed, you and I talked about before the call, is shifting the fee token that's paid to VE Curve holders to CRV USD and away from 3 Curve. Why would that be done, or what's the benefit to doing that?
Yeah, it's also one thing. It makes sense because it's our own, you know, it just makes sense. It's our own US dollar, why should we give this like as a fee? This is like the first thing. Secondly, it's another supply thing, basically, you know, because I don't know, I didn't withdraw my fees since like half a year, maybe. On week of lockup, I have. It's not a lot, so I don't do it, it's just sitting there, basically. So that's another supply thing. And the other thing is that I'm not sure right now, but I guess Curve USD is mostly, if you look at all the pools, maybe it's the most easy token to use to sell to other paired collaterals, basically. So if we say every token we have has also like a Curve USD pool, or most of them, it's also from the selling, converting to, it's like an easier place to do, basically, because and you can do it like internally. But on the other hand, it's not easy to implement. You know, it's not, because how we collect fees is like somehow it's not complicated, but fee generation is different on different pools. And we have to convert this to Curve USD or now to 3 pools. And we have to change internally things to do this. So this is why it's not like, just turn it on.
That's why. Yeah. Let's explain that just a bit. So let's assume you've got ETH and staked ETH as one pool, and somebody trades from ETH to staked ETH inside of that pool on Curve. They pay the fee token. What would be the fee token in that pool? And then what does Curve do with that fee token to then get it currently into 3 Curve? Like it has to sell that fee token, and like how does it get from,
it's different. I don't know all the details, but there's like I know on StableSwap, and we take one side of the trade, so you get the naked token basically as a fee. I think it depends on the we get both sides, but it depends on the side of the trade. You take on one side the fees accrued and the other not, so it should be over time accrued on the same value on both sides, basically, more or less. But we have to make token. Then on other, I think on CryptoSwap, the fee is taken as a liquidity pool token, basically. So you get like share of the liquidity.
All three. Pool. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
No, not all three. It depends. On CryptoSwap, you get the liquidity pool token. So you have the liquidity pool token, which you have to split up then and sell, basically, just one step more on it. But on other pools, on StableSwap, they just, you get the naked token and then somehow I think it accrues in the pool and then we can withdraw it to the pool and do conversion or convert it to free pool assets, basically.
And what would back, as opposed to converting it to 3CRV or 3Pool assets in order to pay out as a for the fee, what backs that CRV USD? Like if it's a, you've collected it, it's a fee that needs to be paid out to VECRV, but what backs that CRV USD as a, where did it get? How did it come into existence? You know, like there was no.
Yeah, I guess we buy them somehow.
Okay.
So you sell, if you sell the ETH, example, we have now this ETH.
Yeah.
And then we, I don't know how it really works, but in a way it should work that you sell three parts of it as, and to DAI, one part to USDC and the other one to USDT, and then you add liquidity to the pool at the end of the process, basically.
Got it. Okay, so it's always creating demand side. It's creating demand side for CRV USD in order to get the token to then pay it out to a.
Yeah, in a way, yes. Yeah, that's true. So that's another beneficial point. Yeah, it creates demand side for Curve USD if we would use Curve USD. But now it creates demand side for the free pool.
Yeah. Okay. Basically. All right. So it's like, all right.
So if you, the thing is more if you collect dust, you know, the issue is more an ETH is easy, but if you're like in a layer two chain and there somebody opens up a quite illiquid token and pairs it to another token is not very liquid, then it's not so easy to do it, basically, because we never can touch the funds, you know, we have to do it decentralized. So it's like
But then you've collected fees in two illiquid tokens and the DAO has to sell both of those illiquid tokens to get them back to a the three curve, let's say, even if it's on a layer two.
It's not a non-brainer, it's like some, you need like a good system behind to be able to execute that in a good way, and it needs coordination, and you have to go to mainnet at the end, basically.
Yeah, one of the questions I'd asked you in the lead up to the show was, I framed it as the challenges which Curve has faced in terms of educating the larger DeFi community about its offerings, and what Curve, the liquidity providers and CRV bag holders can do to help. Like, how do you multiply Martin's efforts 100x in the sense of, and let me frame this in a less less esoteric way. So I see Curve as a group of very talented engineers and sort of like the product speaks for itself as far as it being like self-evident that it's good, and it doesn't have like a ton of marketing hype behind it. Actually, like kind of it doesn't want the hype. And so, how does somebody who wants Curve to succeed help it without pissing off or violating its core principles of cool? We're like, first and foremost, we are physicists and math wizards and, we build incredibly good software and the market will recognize it at some point, it will get around to it.
We're just very engineering driven. That's how I name it. So we are very engineering driven in a way. And if you ask, and also like how I focus mostly on like talking to other protocols. So the questions, there's like, now you speak about like small investors, maybe
you can name retail, let's say
retail, how can they help us or what they can do. I think best they can do is sell our technology in a way, if they're able to, because this means if they see some other projects who try to achieve things which either could be built on Curve or other way, or they could use a good like place for a stable asset, or they have a stable asset, which would be benefit from curves like technology, I guess. And most of these people you described is like they're not like investors, they're like part of the community basically. Mm-hmm. So they want to help us. So yeah. So I guess this is the best way. It's not about we are not against like people shilling our protocol or the project itself, because we have like good products. But it's not I think it's also like, of course, everyone wants to see more value or more recognition of the value in the token or on Curve. But somehow, I guess it's also a little bit to do with the market cycle or how these cycles work, you know, in a way, they're like, old protocol and the, how to say, we have a good story and we have a good product, but it's like the illusions people can have is like reduced by the things.
The fact that it's actually out in the marketplace.
Yeah, so, in a way, yeah. That's only the one thing. That's the only thing, basically. Because crypto is a market who is like filled with narratives and stories people tell. People tell, communities tell each other this like the story, this like story. And then you have like, you imagine like this is like the next big thing. And then, you buy the token. And
you wrote about this on your blog.
Then it's like, you make money until the story doesn't add up. And then, the price like gone of the token. It's an interesting force, but we are not affected by this anymore in a way. We are too serious for this kind of. It's also too. You can also calculate too much things. You know, if you see, I just checked before the talks on how much fees you get on locked Curve in stablecoin, and it's like 30%. Like I don't know which time scale, maybe last week. So it's a lot, you know. It's really a good share. If you imagine if a share repays itself in 3 years, you can buy the same amount. So it's like, it has like a, how do you, I don't know.
It's a good investment. In the TradFi world, it's an excellent investment.
Itself, and it's like a 3 multiplier. You can have it back.
3x on now.
That's crazy low. You know, evaluation is really crazy low, basically. And it's, but what you see, you know, but it's just my perspective. Also, you have also a limited amount of money to deploy. Also, myself, you know, I'm part of this market too. So if you have like stable coin, you want to invest, should you invest in something who maybe gives you like a 5-fold or 2-fold in the next year? Or should you like invest and Curve can token maybe, I guess it will make this jump too. But then if you think it is cash flow assets, then you maybe think, okay, I buy a regulated asset. It's better maybe because maybe it makes a 5x. And I think it's very possible that Curve makes a 5x too, but it's just another thinking, you know. This is why if you have a cash flow, then people look much closer at this as like a stock.
They apply traditional financial valuation or like they understand like there's a certain amount of cash flow. So therefore, you know, using discounted cash flow modeling, I should be able to project the, you know, what this asset's worth to me. Whereas with my meme coin, you know, it's the sky's the limit. And there is it's strictly narrative based and there's nobody who can disagree with what I think it's worth as a meme coin or as a, you know, like some of the tokens that just launched, because nobody can say what the heck, like, well, you think it's worth one, I think it's worth 10, and the market will also decide on that. But it's not based around financial calculations. It's based around who can tell the story better or who can be the louder teller of the story on social media or on certain channels. Right. And I think Curve has decided just not to play that game, which part of the reason why I think people who get involved in the ecosystem, understand what the product's doing, understand how it works, how it fits together. They tend to stick because they see the elegance of it and appreciate it from an engineering standpoint, because you and I both have a software development background, and you start to appreciate, yeah, there's a lot here, and there's also a lot of thought that's gone into it, and it's very carefully constructed.
Yeah, that's the underrated force of Curve, because it is really stellar engineering, you know.
Yeah.
As an engineer, if you see this, you think, okay, this is like a different beast, basically. And yeah, I'm attracted by this, you know, because it's not like it's as complicated as it has to be. It's not like over engineered. Or it's like, yeah, that's how it should be. And if you think, I did think a lot about stablecoins and how can you make stablecoins also like in a maybe more alchemistic ways and these are funny things, but I could never implement this kind of money I have been thinking of, basically. And if you look at the solutions, well, yeah, mostly Mitch is the guy who was like, yeah, he's like the wizard of this, like doing this.
Incredible.
So it's like the lead thinker of this, and he's able to implement this. And this is really, yeah, it's a big motivation for myself, you know, to be part of this, because it's not only thinking one thing is easy, you know, you see, you may, also if you look at stabilizing stable coins, if you look at the fiat, how we print like non-backed curve USD, and this answer is not like, not Mitch invented in a way, but it's like, he's like the, I think the best answer at this point of the problem, basically. And I don't know, I'm not sure you can like iterate on this, but if you look at design space, you know, there are limits on design space. Sometime, at some point, design space is just not, you can put a lot of energy in it, but it doesn't get any better. It's only a little bit and nobody cares. And if you look now, if you look at soft liquidation, how this works, for me, it's like, yeah, if you understand how it works, then it's like, okay, this is obviously a solution for a problem who exists like since a long time. And the solution itself, it's, you know, the idea that you sell continuously, you sell part of the collateral to the backing token. So it's like, yeah, soft sell. It's not, I don't know if the idea is new, but who can implement this? So you need somebody who can think it and implement, and Mitch is the guy
who's able. Incredible. Yeah, no,
this
incredible.
This is not very common in if you look at innovation, it's mostly driven by people, who are at some point and are able to achieve things which other people can't. So,
yeah.
And of course, you need the right timing and all other things, but it's like, so it's not so. Yeah, it needs a lot of, you know, it's not that you need to be a genius. This like goes this direction. It's not that you need to be a genius, but you need like the right setting for your ideas. And basically, for Mitch, crypto or exchange or all this technology, it's like he fits his mindset or his way of thinking. So he can manifest in this technology. I get maybe in other times it wouldn't be that beast or the project now, it has manifested itself, because then he would have another life. But it's like the perfect combination.
Sandbox. His
mind, he thinks about how he thinks about money, or if you say he turns like upside down, he's like, it fits crypto in a way. And I don't know if there are many founds like him, basically. So I'm quite. Yeah.
Last question, to be respectful of your time. Do you worry about key man risk with Mitch?
I'm not, because if you see, you know, what we are able with him is like iterate on the just chip something on top, basically, on the innovation and be like the first mover. And this is only one way to win for any product or market. So if you think, yeah, you have this kind of risk, then I guess there are so many. That's the beauty of having product market fit. You know, if you have product market fit, then there are many ways you can like develop your products. And it's only now it's very based on technology, but Curve could also like take different directions. So if we would have less engineering power, basically, or less like, how we say, like this kind of
insight
bring it to the world. Engineering power Mitch has, or we have other very good engineers, of course, and some of them have other ideas who are also like valuable, maybe not in the direction he is like thinking, but in other directions. So it's not, I don't think it exists in the way, because like the system itself is like independent of we are in this case, we are like a real DAO. It's not that.
Yeah, it's decentralized at that level.
Yeah, it's decentralized, and somebody would just, or we, or it would just change it, basically. But it helps, of course, it helps.
Yeah, I would love to meet Michael one day. I admire him from afar. What he's been able to accomplish, and also the talented people, yourself included, that he's been able to gather into the vortex that is Curve, right? And the ecosystem that's developed around Curve, the flywheel, Convex, Stake DAO, Frax, Clever, Aladdin DAO, these different abstractions on top of what, the liquidity side of Curve offers.
You're also very open, you know, people. Yeah, that should be like the composability of DeFi in a way. I think we keep that up, you know, you can build on us and we will try to help you basically. And I see, you know, if you think how it's not about, I mean, from a culture standpoint, if you look at how Uniswap, how they think their DEX basically. Yeah, it's different. They make their own front end and take a cut in the fees as like a company. You can do this, and that's fine. But somehow, we think different. We need very good partners also outside who try to multiply us basically. And I guess that's much more collaborative basically. It's not about, it's just a different way of thinking, I guess.
Well, I think there's also, again, I'll talk about this from like an attack vector, but Uniswap, based in the US, US founders, they subject to SEC regulation. You have, you know, Swiss Stake, the holding company for the intellectual property of Curve. Michael's Russian, I think, in terms of a passport, lives in Switzerland. And I think that also, go ahead.
Yeah, he's Australian, but he's like, he grew up in Russia.
Oh, okay. Apologies. All right. Yeah. So I mean, maybe there's different attack vectors there being Australian opposed to the US.
Maybe we are just more careless. I don't know, or more teaching. I don't know. Sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just, yeah. If you talk about risk. I think Switzerland is a very good place, basically. Not for myself. Yeah, I'm Swiss, you know, I'm stuck somewhere. Now. But it's a good place to innovate because we are not very scared of just. That's interesting about Switzerland. You know, it's pretty conservative in a way. But the other way, government doesn't regulate everything with like fresh and new. Just we look and see what's going to happen. Then maybe we regulate.
Hey, folks. Thanks for listening. As you probably are aware, there was a complete internet and power outage here. The call got cut short, unfortunately. So Martin and I wrapped the podcast up offline. Just want to say, really enjoyed having him on. If you would like to follow him, learn more about what he's up to, go to cryptonative.ch. That's .ch for the Swiss TLD for the domain. Or check him out on Twitter at Martin Krung, K-R-U-N-G. And also check out what Curve Finance is doing. That's curve.fi. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you on the next show. Hi again, folks. If you enjoyed the show, I've got a favor to ask. Would you mind leaving a positive review on iTunes, Spotify, or whichever platform you've been listening to this podcast on? Every one of those helps. If you didn't like the show, or if you've got feedback about it, let me know via the contact form on spreadgreatideas.org. I'd like to hear from you as far as what can be done to improve. Again, if you enjoyed the show, then please help out by spreading the word. And if you didn't, let me know how to improve it. Thanks a lot for your attention, and I hope you'll check out the next one.